Hare Krishna, welcome. And so this is the Sunday program, the Ljubljana Center of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Thank you for coming. Anyone is coming here for the first time? So all veterans. So how many of you heard the topic of today's lecture? Okay, the topic was about married life. The exact title was, anybody has it in their electronic devices? Something like, marriage is for peace, but only when done properly. Something like that. So I'll start with the verse from Bhagavad Gita. First of all, let me offer my respectful obeisances. We'll start by reading text 5 of chapter 18. Lord Krishna says, Yagyadana tapha karma natyajyam karyam eva tat yagyadanam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The yogis should perform acts for the advancement of human society. There are many purificatory processes for advancing a human being to spiritual life. The marriage ceremony, for example, is considered to be one of these sacrifices. It is called Vivaha Yagya. Should a sannyasi who is in the renounced order of life and was given up his family relations encourage the marriage ceremony? The Lord says here that any sacrifice which is meant for human welfare should never be given up. Vivaha Yagya, the marriage ceremony, is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. For most men, this Vivaha Yagya should be encouraged, even by persons in the renounced order of life. Sannyasis should never associate with women, but that does not mean that one who is in the lower stages of life, a young man, should not accept a wife in the marriage ceremony. All prescribed sacrifices are meant for achieving the Supreme Lord. Therefore, in the lower stages, they should not be given up. Similarly, charity is for the purification of the heart. If charity is given to suitable persons, as described previously, it leads one to advanced spiritual life. How many of you are married? Okay. How many of you have been married? How many of you are single? Okay. So, we are embodied beings. Means that we are souls, we are atmas. which ended up in a mature body. But not by chance, but due to our karma. Now we are in a human form of life. And this body, a mind, comes with certain instincts, certain natural inclinations. And generally, most human beings have an inclination for coupling, for joining up another human being, generally of the opposite gender, but not exclusively, and create a pair, a partnership. Now, in civilized society, that's established through marriage. It's established through a firm commitment between a man and a woman to be loyal to each other and to live together, to create, in most cases, progeny, to have children, and to be productive members of society. And this is the civilized life program for most people. I don't have an exact statistics, but we are talking about, 98-99% or even more. So Srila Prabhupada here speaks an interesting, what I find a very interesting sentence. Sorry, I just lost the page, but I will find it again. The marriage ceremony, and of course we are not talking about just the ceremony, we are not talking about just the wedding, we are talking the marriage as a project of 25, 30 or more years. So the marriage ceremony is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. Ultimately, spiritual advancement is the goal of life. We are embodied in these bodies, but these bodies are temporary, and our physical identities are temporary. Today we are men, next life we may be women, or who knows what. And so the goal of life is spiritual advancement. But we need a platform for this spiritual advancement. So Srila Prabhupada, our founder, Acharya, explains that the marriage institution provides this platform for the human mind to become peaceful. Now, we need to understand what peaceful means. Married life generally is not so peaceful, because it's a life of responsibilities. And these responsibilities bring pressure. There is, first of all, living with another person. It's always challenging, because there may be differences of opinion. I don't know if it also happens in Slovenia. But in other parts of the world, husbands and wife occasionally have differences of opinion. Sometimes 48 times in the arc of the day. So, it's a challenge to keep a friendly relation. Then, of course, there are economic pressures. Being married means having a house, and having a house means having some food in the kitchen, and especially at these latitudes, it needs to have some heating system in the house, and you need electricity, and you need transport. This needs money. And to make money, of course, one needs to work, in most cases, unless one is born in an extremely rich family. So, and work, of course, brings more pressures, more difficulties. Then there are children, and children brings a lot of anxiety. First of all, the very act of protecting them from harm or curing them when they're ill, worrying about their education, their school performance, the choices in life, their careers, the partnership or the companionship they will also establish in life. So one may question, but so where is the peace of mind? Well, the peace of mind means it gives a peaceful sense of self, in the sense it gives us, provides us an identity. It provides us a platform to act in this world. And, as here it says, is meant to regulate the human mind. Again, as I said in the beginning, the human mind is, the tendency of the human mind is to be attracted to the opposite gender. But, through the marriage system, we put our energy on a particular person. And so a man starts thinking, this is my wife. And a woman starts thinking, this is my husband. And that's it. Pause for emphasis. So, that's it. For this life, this is my companion. Do I always agree? No. Do I always like the way he acts or she acts? Probably not. Do I always feel a spontaneous outburst of affection? Possibly not. But this is my companion in life. And I'm not going to change it. And I'm going to work on this relation. And I'm going to work responsibly to maintain this family and to create a favorable atmosphere for the children so that they can grow up, be God conscious, be good citizens, and they prepare for their own life. So this is the meaning. Because the mind, the tendency of the mind is to go here and there. Chanchalam in Sanskrit. But marriage, it gives us some boundaries. And within these boundaries, we can find our peace. Peace in the sense that all the ramifications of going out of this boundary, all the complications outside these boundaries are prevented if we stay within boundaries. And that's a regulated position of the peaceful mind. A strong sense of identity and a strong sense of duty. And a program. For instance, they made a research in the UK, in England, that not being married is very bad for health. Not being married. Because they found that those who are not married, they have a very unregulated life. They drink too much, they sleep too little, they smoke. But when they, especially men, yes, thanks for the clarification. And especially men, yes, it's a fact. And they're all undisciplined. But when they get married, they have somebody who takes care of them. And often the meals become more regular, become more wholesome. There is a natural curbing of the vices, of the bad habits. Because the wife will not allow you to drink too much. Like that. You go less out with friends, and therefore you drink less, and you waste less time. And then you have a job, and therefore, you have to sleep at night, can't just go around all night. And so they concluded that marriage is also very good for health. Now, can I have that book? I want to read another passage, say a few words, and then let Shirada Govindadasi, my wife, speak. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 21, text 30, no, chapter 21, text 31. And here Srila Prabhupada is discussing different the duties in different stages of life, especially the sannyasi and the householder. Everybody is familiar with the concept of sannyasi. Who doesn't know what sannyasi mean? Okay. Of course, you see many sannyasis here in Ljubljana. That's a fact. So you get the idea, of course. So sannyasi is the renounced order of life. Is a man who either has been married or has never been married, and he made a vow not to enter family life anymore. And generally, is a position for people advanced, not only in spiritual knowledge, but also in age. It's not something for teenagers to do. So, here Srila Prabhupada says, a sannyasi, or one who is in the renounced order of life, should wander from door to door, from village to village, from town to town, and from country to country, all over the world, as far as he is able to travel and enlighten the householders about Krishna consciousness. A person who is a householder, but is initiated by a sannyasi. So how many of you, or many of us, are in this category? Householders initiated by a sannyasi. Okay, so it's a significant demographics, about 40%. A person who is a householder but is initiated by a sannyasi has the duty to spread Krishna consciousness at home. As far as possible, he should call his friends and neighbors to his house and hold classes in Krishna consciousness. Holding a class means chanting the holy name of Krishna and speaking from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Srila Prabhupada used this word duty. In other words, doesn't only say it would be very nice, would be very favorable. He says it's a duty. If one is initiated a devotee and lives at home, he has the duty to do something for spreading Krishna consciousness also. He has already so many responsibilities, economic, social, as father or mother. But there is an added responsibility of doing something for suffering humanity. And what Srila Prabhupada here suggests or recommends or orders is something practical. You have a house, you bring some friends, neighbors, contacts, some acquaintances, colleagues perhaps. And then you hold a class, means there is some chanting, and then you read or you explain, you discuss from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Simple thing. You don't have to be a great teacher, you don't have to be a great speaker, but you have, if you are a householder, you have some duty to be part of the missionary activities. You don't have to go all the way to Mongolia or Bolivia or North Korea. You can stay in your apartment, maintain your job, but do something. And there is something else here. There is a division of labor in the Lord's service. The householder's duty is to earn money, because a sannyasi is not supposed to earn money, but is completely dependent on the householder. The householder should earn money by business or by profession, and spend at least 50% of his income to spread Krishna consciousness. 25% he can spend for his family, 25% he should save to meet emergencies. So in other words, if you can afford it. Some people are just barely above this survival line, so they are exempted. But if you are a little above the surviving line, whatever extra money, what's called technically discretionary income, what you save from the basic after the basic expenses, like your mortgage, your rent, your transport, your food, your utilities, gas, light, education, and so on. If there is something left, 50% of that should be used for missionary purposes, for charity. Support at least those who are doing more missionary activities. 25% you use for the family, means you can go to some picnic, some vacation, some gifts. Women love gifts. Men like gifts, but women, they really like them. Am I correct? No, it's a fact. It's much easier to buy something for a woman than to buy something for a man. Have you ever had this experience? Near Christmas, or, you know, you buy for a man, you really don't know what to buy for a man. Socks are pretty safe. Especially because they men tend to break them constantly. They have some special shakti in the feet. But for women, there is a vast variety, right? There's a vast variety of ornaments and perfumes and other decorations and so on.
Because with a bad gift, you can really make a mess.
With a bad gift. And then 25% you should save to for emergencies. Because there's always something happening which is not in the normal course of expenses. Like a dentist, or you have to change the tires, something that. So you have to have some reserve for the future. You can't just be irresponsible. So this is what I wanted to share. Basically 3 points. Marriage life should be recommended for most people in civilized life. It's a platform of peaceful because it regulates the mind, the wild mind. In a very clear, authorized, legitimate identity and function. Then, these aspects of being participants of a broader mission of Lord Chaitanya, the broader mission of spreading Bhakti Yoga in society, through being active, giving shelter to people who may be interested, and also to donate some of the discretionary income for the missionary activities or for supporting a temple, supporting other Krishna conscious projects. So I will stop here and I let my wife speak.
Hi Krishna.
By the way, sorry to interrupt. Can you put that there? See, my wife is also the director of a project. It's called Bhakti Marriages Systems. She will tell you about the YouTube channel. And she put together all the whole premarital course for future married people, future grihasthas,
newly married.
And a proof that she's an expert is that she already tolerated me for 16 years. So that's already proof.
We have many of us here who are not married. So on behalf of those who are married, I'm going to give you a little example. Sometimes I need you to help me hold the mic. So
that's it.
Okay. So usually it's like this. The man usually feels, I feel incomplete. If there is a woman, then I will feel complete. And the woman is generally thinking, well, everything is good in my life, but if only I had the man, then I would feel complete. So these two incompletes, they try to come together and they create a bigger incomplete. Because that's the material nature. When we think that something is going to complete us, when we start out something feeling lonely, sad, and when we enter into another relationship, the loneliness and the sadness only increases. It's just science. So usually people are... People are usually very desperate to find a partner because... I want to give you an example with these two capsules. Here are these two capsules, and I'd like to compare these two capsules with male and female. The male and female energies are something like this. I mean, they are the same capsules, but you can see it's inverted. So when they're healthy, whole, complete, meaning the man feels, I'm feeling secure. I'm financially stable, I'm emotionally stable, I'm physically quite healthy. And I would like to create a family so that I can contribute to the society in a better way. If that is, I mean, that's the ideal situation, just like Kaunteya Prabhu quoted to us from the scriptures, that's the ideal situation, okay? When the man is feeling secure, security is a very, very important word. So if a man is feeling secure and complete to a large extent, and the woman, on the other hand, is also feeling complete and secure in herself, she's not thinking, I cannot live without a man. That's usually the psychology of women. We tend to think that we cannot survive without the men. We cannot go on in this way. Why? Because the general tendency of the female is to think that unless and until I have appreciation and validation from the man, I do not feel confidence. But that's actually not true. I mean, just speaking about the basic concepts of masculine and feminine energy, we both possess strength. So the strength of masculine energy is to provide, is to take responsibility. So when I say take responsibility, it doesn't just mean, oh, I will do this. It's a sense of being. Something goes wrong, a healthy man says, well, let me see what is my responsibility in this situation. So when a relationship doesn't work, if a man says, what is my role in it? What did I do wrong? That's a man who is secure in himself. He doesn't have a problem to accept where he is going wrong. Just to give a very simple example of the most secure of most secure of males, Krishna, when he took up the work of riding the chariot for Arjuna, it shows a great sense of security because he did not have self-esteem issues. He didn't think, what is the world going to think about me if I become a charioteer to my devotee? So that's the perfect masculine energy. The man doesn't have a problem to say, I'm sorry. I mean, that's a challenge for most women. We find it difficult to get the men to say sorry. But that's actually the topmost masculine quality according to Vedic astrology. On the other side, a female, we may think, we have this belief system culturally that a woman who does anything the man says is the perfect female or is a chaste one. I'm sorry to... Did you get that? The woman who does anything that the man wants is considered to be the perfect female or chaste wife. But I'm sorry to disappoint the men, but it's not actually like that according to Parashara Muni. Parashara Muni, when he describes about femininity, he says a woman is chaste when she has her own value system very strong. When she's feeling complete and strong in her value system, and she's not going to just bend backwards for anything that the man wants, but rather she has higher principles. That's considered to be a chaste woman. And in fact, the research proves that women who become unsatisfied in relationship...
The chastity.
So when a woman is too flexible. In other words, she's willing to do anything the man wants. Those are the kind of women they end up having affairs and jumping from relationship to relationship because they're looking for the man to complete them. They're looking for the man to make them feel good. Does it make sense to the women? We may know women in our lives who are like, they were with this particular person, particular man. They were doing everything to please him, like literally everything. And that's like, you know, the healthy way is to walk towards God together. But the unhealthy way is, I'm sorry, I'm going to create a little mess. The unhealthy way is to completely want a certain kind of intimacy with the other person that the person really totally gives themselves and basically messes up with that because they don't have enough to give to the other person anymore. So the healthy is when we have certain boundaries, as he was saying, certain boundaries of religious boundaries, religious principles as boundaries. And a commitment to walk towards a certain goal and not to walk towards each other. Because when two people walk towards each other and expect that the other person is going to make me feel good, the other person is going to bring me happiness, there's a disaster in relationships. I don't want to create more disaster here, but you get an idea. When two incompletes come together, it's very messy. But when two completes, okay, let me talk about what it does mean, complete.
You want me to take this?
Complete means somebody who has good degree of emotional stability. So when things don't go well in our life, we don't become all upset and our sense of identity gets shaken. I mean, imagine a man who has that problem. It's very difficult to live with that person. You don't agree to him, he doesn't talk to you, he becomes all nasty, he becomes angry, aggressive. And we usually think that's actually masculinity, but actually according to Vedic tradition, it's insecurity of a man. Because a man can lead, so he doesn't have that problem. He doesn't get upset. I mean, upset, there is an upset. There's a healthy anger, but there is insecure aggressivity. And the same for the woman, as I mentioned. If a woman is feeling secure in herself, it's not going to like break her identity if the man is not always appreciating her or giving her validation. So my point is this. In a healthy marriage, if two healthy individuals come together, they can really create beautiful family, children who are healthy. But if two incompletes come together, they not only create a miserable situation for each other, trying to get something from the other instead of coming together to contribute, to give, to help the other person grow. And they actually create dysfunctional families where children are born with very messy astrological charts. This has been my experience. When individuals don't have enough spiritual life, deeper spiritual sense of identity, a good sadhana, a higher purpose in life, some taste for spiritual life, taste for chanting the holy name. When they don't have that and they come together in a marriage expecting that the other person will fill them, it's always like, it kind of gets messy. So the more complete we can be, we can have healthier relationships. And I'm not only talking about couples like marriage relationships, this is applicable for any relationship. Any two individuals who are unhealthy when they come together, they create maybe not children biologically, but whatever byproducts they create out of that relationship is always problematic. And very interesting thing is also that both according to scientific study of relationships with psychotherapy, certain studies that I did, and also with Vedic astrology, this principle that if you can't have a good relationship with other people around you, parents, friends, colleagues, neighbors, anybody in general, if you feel difficult to have good relationships with people around you, you cannot have good relationship with a spouse. Because it's us. which is a large part of the relationship. It's more than, for each of us, I know it doesn't work out mathematically, like theory-wise, but it's more than 50% is you, how complete you are, how healthy you are. More than complete, I would use the word healthy. And we can divide healthy into different areas, as I mentioned earlier, emotional stability, mental strength, especially for men, but also for women. If you want to take care of kids, raise them in a strong way, you need to be mentally strong. So, one consideration is this. Traditionally, the marriages were working. I mean, 100 years ago, we didn't hear about divorce. I mean, even in the West. Even in the West, there was no concept of divorce. One of the things I observe that people try to do these days, like I was showing with the capsules, people try to cram in 25 years of romance in 6 months. They want to have the whole experience that this couple previously used to have for 25 years. By the time the man discovered the woman, the way they got close to each other emotionally, mentally, it was a beautiful process. It took time. Like, I still remember my grandmother, she was 80 years old, and when she was around my grandfather, she used to be so shy. She wouldn't change her sari when my grandfather was around. And I was like, come on, seriously? And she was trying to explain to me how when they got married initially, how many years it took for her to really lift her head up, look into his eyes and speak. It took her more than a decade. And they had 3 children by then. So my grandmother really taught me a deeper understanding of what intimacy means. What means really being together? What means discovering each other? Because when a woman tried to like spill out her feminine energy very loosely and just everything is out there, the man gets bored. So after 6 months, the charm is gone. But when a woman is complete and secure, there's something always to discover about the person. Actually, the same applies also for the man. He's trying to work on himself and give himself in a slowly, in a progressive way, and give meaning in this way. Because when we walk together towards Krishna, it's progressive. When we try to walk towards each other, it's chaos. Yeah, those are some thoughts, and I wanted to share at the end some information, tools we have, the course that Kaunteya Prabhu mentioned. We have a Bhakti Marriage course. So we have this Bhakti Marriage System. This is the name of the project, and we have premarital training and some courses for couples who are just newly married. It's all based on Prabhupada's teachings. And we have this logo you will see shortly. The logo is a boat, and there is a peacock feather on the boat. That's our logo. And the boat represents the safe marriage. The marriage that helps us cross over this material ocean. And the peacock feather is the ornament of Krishna, and it symbolizes bhakti yoga. And it's devotional service or Krishna consciousness. And the ocean also represents the years of youth. And the boat can take us across these years of youth in a productive, safe and protected way. Jai Shri Shri Panchatattva Ki. What else? So basically, the main purpose of this course, or what we believe in this system of Bhakti Marriage System, is people cannot have a successful marriage unless they get together to help each other in spiritual life and follow the basic teachings of Srila Prabhupada. This is the basic philosophy. And this
you
is
want
the,
to see the... Show the site?
Yeah. The thing is, like, if a marriage is unhealthy, then even in the boat, you can go off. So this is a boat which is kind of lost. So Krishna consciousness is that... what is the difference between the Krishna conscious marriage and a not Krishna conscious marriage is a very thin line. Because the other day we were in Italy and somebody, was it in Italy? Yeah. It was in Italy, somebody was like criticizing Grihamedis. And I was saying, actually Grihamedi is not very bad. It's not bad. It's actually a good thing. In today's world, if you look around, marriages are breaking up so quickly, so easily. And the Grihamedi concept means very attached to married life, to the family. Very attached to the kids, the home, the wife, the husband. So in today's world, we cannot say that's a bad thing. It actually can be a good thing to be attached. Just that the point is, so the boat doesn't go off and take birth again and again. In that experience, attach that to Krishna. That's the point. Here we can see the Bhakti Marriage logo here. This is the boat. And this is the peacock feather representing Krishna. So we have different sections. Here we have Get Ready for Married Life Part 2. It's called the Sailor's Fitness. This particular principle I spoke about, completeness, is covered in this section. Different levels of what does it mean for a sailor to be fit. And then there's this one, this is my favorite part, part 4. Storms, sharks and other dangers. So this course is available for free online. And I'm going to share with you the website. This is the website. You see here, Bill? This is the website where you can find these courses for free. BhaktiMarriageSystem.wordpress.com. Then we have a YouTube channel, Bhakti Marriage System. It's an internal channel. This is only for devotees. It's a new venture. We have interviews. The recent interview we did was with Kalakanta Prabhu. He speaks about the misconceptions of married life. He's an ISKCON guru. He's an author. And he has very successful preaching programs in North America. We also had interviews with different devotees who have experience with Grihastha life. And also they have experience training Grihasthas. Then we are also making like these short documentary movies about couples who married for more than 30 or 40 years. ISKCON devotees. So we make like a story, how did they get married? And what's the story of their marriage? And each story is unique. One principle that worked for one couple may not necessarily work for the other. So we're creating these movies like that. Yeah, and we have more sections of the book, Arts of Sailing, Mapping Your Journey. The whole project is written with this analogy of the boat, the ocean and the sailing and the sailor, the whole thing is written with this analogy to make it more relevant for the modern day people to understand married life in this context of spiritual journey. Okay, so that's something I had to share. We can take questions or comments.
Yes, Mike.
Thank you. I cannot understand about the marriage when you say that the husband and wife should walk towards Krishna and not towards each other. Isn't it both important that they walk, they go to each other and towards Krishna?
Okay. We need to understand the meaning of the words. When we say walk towards each other or walk towards Krishna, yes, in one sense, both are important. But when the focus becomes walking towards each other, this problem that I said happens. People try to cram in 25 years of romance in 6 months. Because that's the nature of male and female, fire and butter. If you put the butter inside fire, what happens? So even anybody who has experience in the kitchen cooking, we know what happens if you put the butter directly in the fire. It becomes useless. So becomes useless in the sense, if you don't have the proper medium, if you don't have the proper container to understand the purpose of why you are together. So the point is, it's very important to have a goal. You were just seeing in that picture, I don't know if it will start or not easily, the boat taking off course. So that's what happens if the focus is each other. Because if you're walking like this, you don't go far. And Srimad Bhagavatam in Prabhupada, in one of the purports, describes how it's like when you walk towards each other. He doesn't say exactly walk towards each other, but the concept is, he says it's like a cow tied to a pole that's just walking around. It's not making the progress. So the point is, it should come as a result of walking towards Krishna. Yeah, thank you.
I just would like to ask also, what's the website or platform that you have these courses?
What's the website?
Platform that you have these courses on the web.
Ah, it's a WordPress website.
No, the name of domain.
Bhakti Marriage System.
We can publish later.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
There are also courses on YouTube channel. Of the. Yes, bro.
I would like to ask you how to properly change the ashram from grihastha to vanaprastha and sannyas.
He did it.
I did it.
You did from brahmachari to grihastha.
Oh, but he's saying the other two.
Oh, I see.
Okay, that's a different lesson for maybe another visit. It's a fact that in ISKCON we do have some, we could say, formal, recognizable steps becoming brahmachari. Generally, you don the saffron dress, grihastha, of course, there is a wedding ceremony, which is generally very public. And then sannyas, of course, there is its own ritual. And there are certain symbols, like danda, a particular way of dress. But the vanaprastha, we don't really have like a ceremony to take vanaprasthas. We don't have a ceremony, or at least we don't use them. I mean, there may be somewhere, but we don't, it's not, you could say, common, okay? And I don't even know if there is actually like a ceremony used in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That, okay, now we are grihasthas, and then we become vanaprasthas. Basically, the principle is that vanaprastha means you have fulfilled most of your grihastha or all your grihasthas obligations, like your children are married or they are brahmachari in the ISKCON Ljubljana. You have fulfilled, no? You brought your children to their level of stability, self-sufficiency. And depending, of course, on your economical situation, you can retire. Maybe you have a pension, or maybe you put away some money. But mostly, of course, it's an internal thing. It's like a decrease of the social interaction, the ambition for making money, for economic development. It's a sense of detachment, and generally comes when one is older, more mature, the senses are more controlled. So, for instance, they won't have any more children, vanaprasthas. They won't have any more children. They won't have any more sex in the couple. So it needs some stability, emotional, physical, mental, intellectual, and spiritual. And then traditionally, the vanaprastha, that's why they're called vanaprastha, vana means forest, they will go and live a life of austerity in forests, or at least in pilgrimage places. So they will often physically move away from their familiar environment. So these are a few ideas. Why you want to take vanaprastha? Okay, so that's the principle. And for sannyas, your GBC, Prahladananda Maharaj, who is coming, I guess, next month, is also the minister for sannyas, so he can give you all the forms necessary. There's a procedure. It's quite developed. Okay? We have a mic for... That's Urukrama Prabhu, yes, right? For those who don't distinguish from his twin body.
Hare Krishna. I would like to ask, I agree with what Mataji said about this, when couples are mature and devotees, but it seems that in Kali Yuga is mostly problem that devotees coming from very from families where were problems, so they themselves are wounded or problematic, we can say, and it's not exemption, is almost a rule in Kali Yuga. So how to make a good couple from such material, mm-hmm. let's say, like that?
Mm-hmm. Very good question. I've seen this examples a lot of times, and what I've seen, what I'm thinking of this particular couple, the woman comes from a background, like you're saying, comes from a dysfunctional family, and both parents had a lot of issues, a lot of baggages, so the children naturally take on the baggage of the parents. It's like that. The children take on both good and bad from the parents. And the husband, from on the other hand, comes from a more functional family. I mean, every family has some dysfunctionality, but in comparison, the person comes from not Indian family, not Vaishnava family. He comes from a Christian background, but he had good experience, especially had a very good mother. So he was well nourished. So it took almost 10 years for this marriage to stabilize, because there was a lot of issue on the woman's side. She was constantly feeling insecure. So there was a lot of difficulty. But because one of the partner was healthy, because one of the partner was secure, I mean, there were very difficult circumstances. But the other person had Krishna conscious value of duty. This is my wife. I mean, there was even an occasion that the wife broke a regulative principle. Still, this husband was like, no, he had hope. No, this Krishna consciousness can work, and she's improving. And so, and now they are one of the very successful marriages, successful families, I can say. And I saw the transition of the phases. So what I can say is, if you are in such a relation, or if you're seeing your friends in such a relation, giving more support to the person who's strong, and to not let the weaker go down, but to keep the person encouraged, helps a long. It helps. How do you say?
It goes a long way.
It goes a long way. And also, as an astrologer, I have seen that the planetary periods also make a big difference. So maybe the woman is in her Rahu period or something. So as she's going through a Rahu period, there's more confusion, there's more depression. But as soon as she moves to a brighter period, then things are easier to feel the difference. You can see it more. So one secret is patience, and the other secret is a stronger person should help the weaker person. The third thing I thought was good association. Being with other families who can empathize with your situation, and not to put down the person, whatever difficulty they may be going through, maybe not able to chant, maybe not able to, whatever it is, not able to follow, but to try to be there. The community, as they say, not to raise a child takes a village, to save a marriage also takes a village.
Thank you.
I don't think we have time for more questions. So we have about 1 minute in which you can clap uncontrollably or do something else. I mean, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.